Starting here, five lines down on the top of Mem Tet Amud Aleph, the Gemara is continuing what we discussed yesterday about the finding of needles inside of the liver. And here's the situation, in Hau Machta Dishtakach in Simpona Rabo de Kavdo. They found a needle inside of the big piping of the liver. That could be one of three different options in terms of the liver. There is the possibility that it's the artery that goes from the heart directly to the liver. Although that's usually a little too small probably for what we're discussing over here. The other two possibilities are that it's the vena cava, which we've discussed before, or there's also what's called the vena porta, which brings the blood back from the digestive system to the liver, to the heart, portal vein, which is also a possibility as to what's being discussed over here. So Huna bar Berei Dravidi Tarif. So he thought it was problematic because how else did it get there? Elaim Kane, it went through the digestive system, punctured the digestive system, and then went into the liver, and that's how it was delivered to there. Father Rav Yume Machshir, he thought it was fine, it wasn't a problem. Atu Sheluhu the Ravina, they went and asked the question of Ravina, Amar Luhu, Shakilu Glima Ditrofai, take away the cape, the cloak, of those that said it was a trefa, meaning that he wants to disbar them because they're giving the wrong sock over here, to take away their mantle because they're giving incorrect psak. Now he's relying on what we said yesterday, and Rashi here tries to clarify it as well. Vehakaneh, vikaneh kaved smuchim zelazeh. The trachea and this piping that belongs to the liver are very close together. Behitchal kam samuch lereya. When they divide close to the lungs, begam kaneh halev, and also the aorta. They split into the lobes of the lungs at one end. Maybe they entered in from the bronchi of the lungs, the simpone kanea kaved, into the piping of the liver. And that's how it got to the kaved, that's how it got to the liver. Now Rashi's description over here is a little different than the description he gave back on Memhei. Memhei, when the Gemara said that there were three pipes, three kaneh, we discussed the possibility that one was the aorta, one was the trachea, and one was most likely the vena cava. So there, Rashi seems to say they all come off of a single point, that they're like basically three that split off the main line, which is the trachea. Over here, Rashi makes it clear that he doesn't necessarily think that they are connected. He says that they pass by each other, that they cross over. And he says that over here, that they are close together when they split. Before in Memhei, he used the word mitpatzel, which literally means to physically split. Over here, mitchalkan sounds to me that when they move away from each other. So some are mitbayek from here that Rashi over here is making it clear he doesn't think that there is a direct connection between them, but rather that they're just passing by each other. In the end, he still has to come up with a way, and that's definitely what's happening over here. The one who is matir, the one who thinks it's makshir, thinks that there's some sort of connection between the lungs and the liver, or some connection between the respiratory and circulatory systems. And the question is how exactly that came about without puncturing any of the digestive tract, which is pasul benekev mashu, and not puncturing the lungs, which is also a trefa if it's as a nekev of a mashu. So you have to have some sort of crossover, and that's obviously what Rashi's trying to describe over here, is the simple note that somehow that bronchi of the lungs allow for some sort of crossover over here. And again, yesterday we discussed the different possibilities of how that could happen, although it's again, it's a far-fetched outcome or situation, and the truth is, ironically, the one who was said it was a trefa, in all likelihood, had a better position over here than the one who was machshir, but the view of Chazal and the view of the Gemara was that he could get there without puncturing, and therefore he believed that the psak of the one who said it was a trefa was erroneous, and that's why he wanted to sanction him, because he was giving the wrong psak. So now, how kashita dishtakach b'moro? They found a date pit in the gallbladder. Amar Rav Ashi, Kavina Beirav Kahana, Amar Hai Vadai Simpona Nakat Va'atai. That definitely came through the piping. Avagav Deloka Nafka, even though it can't get out again. So the gallbladder, which sits right against the liver and has a connection to the liver, has a very narrow mouth to it. The gallbladder itself has a wider sac underneath it, so there the pit is found inside of that sac. So now he says it definitely came through the liver and the piping of the liver. So there was nothing that got punctured in order for it to get there. The problem is that now that it's inside the gallbladder, it can't fit out the top of the gallbladder. So that makes it somewhat questionable as how did it enter the gallbladder that way if it can't be pushed out or squeezed out the top or the narrow top of the gallbladder that attaches to the liver. We're claiming that it came through the liver, the piping of the liver, therefore there was no perforations to get it there. And then it went into the gallbladder through the liver, its connection to the liver. That narrow connection doesn't allow for it to pass through. We took out the gallbladder, now we're trying to push the pit back out to the top and it doesn't fit. So how did it get in if it can't get back out? The Gemara says, Mirubal hu deravioli. It was slowly wedged in. Rashi over here describes the word to mean Mirubal lashon kvara. It's like a sieve, shiminanimota. That when you want to sift something, you shake it back and forth. You move it back and forth, back and forth. And so he says the motion of the animal, of lumbering back and forth and back and forth, slowly caused the pit to slide down the opening of the gallbladder. Again, even though by force, you really can't get it through, but if it's wedged in there and slowly it moves, it moves, it moves, it kind of works its way down into the gallbladder. Hani mile didikla. That's only true when we're talking about a date pit. About the zeta mibza baza. If it was an olive pit, then we would not say that because an olive pit is sharp, and that sharpness would have caused it to tear to get in there or tear something in order for it to get through. Mibza baza, Rashi says, kemachat, similar to a needle. Umad tarif b'machat tarif nami baha. And in yesterday's discussion, the one who said that a needle is problematic, then they would also say that a needle is problematic over here. As we saw yesterday, the machloket Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish and the other chachamim, it's when you find a needle in the lungs, can it come through the piping? Or we assume it came through the intestinal tract or came through the digestive system. So those that are tarif over there, they will say the same thing over here with regards to the olive pit. It got there through the digestive system and it punctured its way through. It's sharp. The date pit is not sharp. Since it's not sharp, it's got to move through piping that allows it to move without having to cut or pierce anything. So the only way for it to get there would be in a safe method, which means that it didn't pierce anything in getting there. Even though it's really big, can't fit through all the pipes, it slowly worked its way down because of the motion of the animal. The olive pit, which is sharp, can act like a needle. And so therefore it could have pierced a wall of something in order to get where its destination was. And therefore Rashi suggests over here, according to those that think that a needle is a problem when you find it in these locations, they would also think that a pit, an olive pit, is problematic. The Baal HaTosafot disagree and say that turns out that this is not the halacha then. Because we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, not like Reish Lakish. We paskin that the needle can get there without piercing anything and the animal is kasher. So why over here all of a sudden are we setting up a situation where we're following the opinion of those that are mitaref? And therefore Baal HaTosafot says, Aval nira, da'afilu Rabbi Yochanan v'machat hu detalinan. That Rabbi Yochanan only says that's true by a needle. Shibata derech simponot. That it came through the piping, came through the bronchi. Aval kashiyata dezeta shem gasim. They're much bigger than a needle. Ve'enim yacholim lavo berevach derech simponot. They can't go through the bronchi. In that when it's coming down the trachea, that's one thing. Even in the larger of the bronchi, it makes sense. But in their assumption that somehow from the smaller bronchial tubes, the item then moved into the circulatory system and then made its way over to the liver, by the time you get down to the bottom of the lungs, the small bronchial tubes, they're tiny. Now a needle could go through there and then possibly enter the circulatory system, but an olive pit could not fit through there. And so the Baal HaTosafot claimed that this would be even according to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan would agree here that even though by a needle he thinks it's fine and it's a kshera, the animal over here, he would agree that it's a trefa because the zayit has two aspects to it. It's large and it's piercing. So it has two negatives. One is it can't just easily fit through the piping. And number two is it's sharp, so it's going to pierce its way through. And there it has a capacity to move out of the digestive system and then make its way to the liver or to the gallbladder. The date pit, which has one aspect, which is that it's large, but doesn't have the piercing aspect of it, it's very hard for it to get out of any system. It would be impossible. If it was in the intestinal system, it wouldn't be pointy enough, sharp enough, to exit the digestive system and then move over to the liver. So that means that the only way it could have been delivered is through the piping. Despite the fact that it's big, we say that it worked its way through slowly, meaning that it slowly wedged its way in, and then by the movement of the animal caused it to move over time and move from the respiratory system into the circulatory system. Again, it is a far-fetched explanation, but we have to give some explanation for why it's found here, how it got here without causing a trepha. And again, the shape of it also makes it more likely that it didn't do something or pierce something to get there. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lamani Krashma Re'a. Why are the lungs called the Re'a? Shme'ira et einayim. Because it's good for your eyes, whether that means it's good for your eyesight, or it makes your eyes sparkle, twinkle, meaning that it's something that's positive when you eat it for your eyes. Ibailu l'achila. Does that mean you just need to eat the lungs? O ayadei smanim. Or is it through medicinal mixture? So it means that you have to dry out the lungs, you crush it, and then you mix it with other spices, and then together with those other items, it has medicinal value. So the question is, when we have this rea, the lungs that cause better eyesight or are medicinally efficacious, what's the way that you take the medicine? Is it simply to eat the lungs? Or is it part of another mixture? Tashma. Tamravuna bar Yehuda, avza bizuza. You can buy a goose for a zuz. Vireya dida ba'arba'a. But its lungs cost four. So, isa kadatka la'akhila. If you think all you have to do is eat it, then linkat bezuza. Spend the zuz, buy the whole goose. Vileiko. And then you can buy it. Why are you going to spend four to just get the lungs? Spend a zuz, you get the whole goose. You get the lungs plus. You get all of that extra. It must be elayadeis manim. It must be clear that the reason people are paying a premium for the quote-unquote lungs is not because of the lungs themselves, but because of the medicinal mixture that's there. So when they're saying the lungs are for four zuz, it doesn't just mean the plain lungs. It means the lungs in their medicinal setting, in their recipe that helps out the eyesight. Inkeva reya. Heicha demimash misha yidei detabcha talinan olotaninan. With the lungs have something wrong with them. They are torn. They have a hole in them, but it's an area where the hands of the butcher go, and therefore we could be tolet. We could say that possibly the hole was created not naturally. It wasn't there beforehand. It was created by the pressure force that the butcher put on it when he was removing the lungs, when he was working around that area. Rashi Ovir explains the areas that we are speaking about. He says, Ani shamati. I heard v'meitzara chazeh, in the narrow part of the thoracic cavity, that's towards the front of the animal, where the lungs narrow, and it's hard to get your hands in there because it's tightly packed. That's what we said yesterday. The lungs there are pushed up against the ribs, against the basar there, and that's why if they were had a sircha or they had a hole in them and it was covered, we said that it would stay and not get pulled away. So mishitocha dchak hayakorat v'tziburnav. Because of that tightness, when you put your hands in there to pull out the lungs, to remove them from inside, then it would tear or it would rip. So therefore, there's a reason to believe that if you find something afterwards that's there, in all likelihood, it was caused by the pressure, the force that was applied by the butcher. That's what Rashi says, I heard. Uchumidume ani, b'chomakom shiudea, shecholit lot. Rashi says, I think this has broader application. I don't think it's just in that narrow spot in the beginning of the thoracic cavity where it's tightly packed. I said it's anywhere where you can attribute it to the butcher. Anywhere where you say that he handles it. Kugon, nekev asui b'sakin. Because it's the butcher's hands isn't the only thing that goes in there. He also puts in the knife. He's cutting out the lungs from the parts that are around it. He also uses a knife. And there's a possibility that the knife pierced those lungs. O, shetal shami mala b'chazaka. Or he's pulling above with force. And then you find a nekev. So Rashi thinks that this has much broader application, meaning that you move around the lungs. When you're working at taking the animal apart, pulling out the pieces of the animal, there's a lot of contact between you and the lungs, and then also the utensil, the knife that you're using, and the lungs themselves. And so anywhere where it's possible the lungs were exposed to your working, workmanship, your tools, then there's a possibility that you could attribute it to that, causing it. And then in that case, would we be toleh or would we not be toleh? So if Adar Bar Natan Amar Talinan, he says we do give that excuse, meaning that we do attribute it to that. We have a similar concept by Nida, that if there's a ketem for a woman, do we say that that's dam nida, or is there a way to attribute it to something else? And that could be that there's a cut, could be that in their day, and we still have attribution like this, that it could be a louse that was smushed over there if it's a small enough size. So if we have any way to be tole it on something besides dam nida, then we are tole. So it's the same type of question over here. If there's a possibility of saying that the treifa that we see now in the lungs was caused after the fact, are we tole? So Rav Adar Ben Natan says yes. Mazucha bray the Rav Mari Amar lo talinan. Behilchata the Gemara paskins talinan, that we are tole, that we do say that we look at these possible excuses, quote unquote, and say that if it's found after the fact, and it looks like it was handled by the butcher, an area where the butcher's knife went, something that could attribute it to the butcher, then we will. Amar Rav Shmuel bray the Rav Yabao. Abba mireshe klei derafrafam havel. Rav Shmuel bray the Rav Abua says, my father was amongst the leaders or the head of the academy in the time of Rav Ram. Rashi, on the other hand, says that he was one of those that gave over the shear of Rav Ram. He repeated whether that means he was an amora, like a broadcaster of the shear, or whether that means that he used to teach his Torah. But he was close with Rav Ram, who was the Rosh Yeshiva. Vamar Talinan. And he says that you are Toleh. So he's bringing a memra from his father. And the memra from his father comes, he suggests, from Rav Ram because of his closeness to the Rosh Yeshiva. Amru Elaha, the Kamei, the Marzutra, Brei, the Rav Mari. They sit over this memra of Rav Shmuel, Brei, the Rav Abua, in front of Marzutra, Brei, the Rav Mari, Velo Kavla, and he didn't accept it. Amar Rav Misharshia, Kavatei, the Abua, the Abba, Mistabra. So Rav Misharshia says, along the lines of what my grandfather says, makes sense. And now, his grandfather was Rav Acha, who was the original Baal Memra here. In our Gemara, it's Rav Adar Bar Natan. But if you look in the Masorah Shas, he said it's really a Rav Acha Bar Natan. And so he's referencing back to his grandfather, Rav Acha Bar Natan. And Rav Misharshia says, he's right when he says Talinan, because the Hatalinan Bezeiv. Earlier on in the Masechta, back on Daf Tet, we said that if you had intestines that were sitting out on the table, and then a wolf came, took them away, and then brought them back, and now we find holes in them, then we assume that the holes that you find in the intestines were caused by the teeth of the wolf when he walked off with them, and we don't assume that he put his teeth exactly where there was a hole in the intestine before, so that it was a treifa. But we do attribute. We attribute problems to the circumstantial evidence that's there. A wolf walked off the intestines, and all likelihood the holes that are there from his teeth when he took them away. And similarly over here, the same should be true by the lungs. We're going to assume that the holes or the cuts in the lungs came from the handling of the lungs. As long as we can make sense that the butcher handled it over there, we're going to attribute it to him rather than say that it was a treifa. And that follows along the halacha that we said, that hilchata talinan. Morana. If you have worms, which means that there was clearly internal decay in the animal, you find something rotting and there are worms coming out of it. It could be some sort of disease. And they are coming out of holes in whatever organ. Let's say, for instance, here we're speaking about the lungs. You have these worms coming out and they're leaving holes in the lungs. Pligi bar Rav Yosef bar Dusai v'rabonon. Chad amar kodem shchita parish, that he separated away. The worm exited the lung before the shchita, which would then make it into a treifa because it means there was a hole in the lung before the shchita was done. Chad amar lachar shchita parish. The others suggest that the worms are only meaningful after the shchita is done, meaning that they only exited the lungs after the shchita was complete. So then it would be ksheira, because there was no hole in the lung before the shchita was done. V'hilchata, the halacha is lachar shchita parish. We assume that they exited the lungs only after the shchita was done, and therefore the animal is a ksheira and not a treifa. Over there, the Sichat Chulin brings a discussion about whether that's only true when the worms are found in the hole. He quotes from the Marshal and the Bach that only when there's a worm exiting the hole can you attribute the hole to the worm. Because then you have evidence or circumstantial evidence that the hole was caused by the worm and the worm's exiting now, so you assume that it happened after Shchita. On the other hand, the Shach says that even if you have holes that don't have worms directly associated with them, if you find other holes nearby with worms exiting, that's enough already to indicate that this happened after Shchita, and this hole also was made by a worm and not a treifa. The question is, how much circumstantial evidence do you need to show you that it was really created by a worm? And again, the assumption being that it happened after Shkita. Not sure who would want to eat this animal, but nevertheless, the animal is not a treifa because of the fact that they have evidence that these worms, after the Shkita, are causing the damage. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ad Shedina Kev. So in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon says, until there's a puncture of the lung, it is considered to be kosher. And we discussed before that Shedina Kev, Beta Simple Note, meant that it was puncturing the largest of the bronchi. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's not enough that there's a hole in the lung. It has to be a hole that reaches to one of the two main trunks of the bronchi. Amar Rabba Bar Tachlifa, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba, Ad Shedina Kev Simpon Gadol. Here is this, what we've been saying all along as the definition of what he said in the Mishnah. It means until it reaches one of those large trunks of the lungs. Yotiv Rav Achar Bar Abba Kameid Rav Huna, Yotiv Kamar. And he said the following, Amar Rabbi Meloch, Amar Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. So now they have this Mesorah from Rabbi Meloch, in the name of Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Amar Lei, Meloch Arba Kambart? You're talking about the Arabian Meloch? Rabbi Meloch that came from Arabia, is that the one you're speaking about? Ein Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon Kamar. He didn't say the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, he said that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. He saw like Rabbi Zera. When Rabbi Zera went up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechei the Rabbibi, he found Rabbibi diyotiv kamar. He was saying over this member of Amar Rabbi Meloch, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha Rabbi Shimon. The same Misora that we found before Rav Achar Bar Abba, who was saying this in front of Ahuna, now we see Rabbibi in Eretz Yisrael giving over the same thing, which is that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Amalei Chayei Demar. So Rabbi Zera says to him, I swear by my life. Da'ana, Rav Chia Bar Abba, I, Rav Chia Bar Abba, and Rav Asi, Iklin Atre to Rabbi Meloch. We went to verify what Rabbi Meloch had said. We went to his city to verify what he said. Ve'amri le, Iyamar Mar, Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. And we asked him straight out, did you say the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? Bar Marlan, ain't Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. Amre. And he responded, no, that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. So that's obviously where Rav Huna got his information from, where he said that Rabbi Meloch said ein halacha, but obviously there was an incorrect Mesorah going around that said that Rabbi Meloch said halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. We found it in Babel by Rav Achar Bar Abba, and we also found it here in Eretz Yisrael where Rabbibi is saying a similar thing. So then Rabbibi says to Rabbi Zera, what Mesorah do you have about this issue? So you're telling me that Rabbi Meloch says that halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. Do you have some other Mesorah? So here we have a different Mesorah, but here it's again from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So here, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi clearly is the author of the position that says Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. The question is, who was the one who brought it? In the first instance, we quoted it in the name of Rabbi Meloch, but when they went to verify with Rabbi Meloch, he said, I never said such a thing. But Rabbi Zera says that I do have a separate Mesorah from Yitzchak Barami that says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Vein Halacha Ke Rabbi Shimon. And then the Stam of the Gemara here says, the Halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. Just interesting to see what Rashi says over here. He says, Gemara Kapasikle. That's the Gemara's Psak, that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. And then there's this little addition over here. Ubi Yeshiva Achrona Nifsku Halachot Halalu. In the final yeshiva, whether that means that in the last of the Amoraim, or in the sitting that put together the Gemara, that actually canonized the Gemara, these halacha were put in. V'apsukot stam b'gemara. They put in all these stamps, sukot, in the Gemara that say halacha ke, ain halacha ke. So that's what Rashi claims over here. It's interesting. Or the way that the Shidu Megubetzit has, Mishivat Ha'achronim. He says that it's from the yeshivot of the latter Amoraim, which is another way to say it. Others suggest that it was put in by the Saboraim. Saboraim are copying over the Gemara. Once it's been canonized, closed by the Amoraim, they're putting in what they have as the Mesorah of what the Halacha was based on the Memrot of the Amoraim. They're putting in what is the practice, what is the Halacha. It's interesting how Rashi describes it over here. He says it's a result of the latter Amoraim putting in a stamma de Gemara that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. Nikva hakeva. If the Abumasim has been punctured, that makes it into a treifa. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Hoshaya, Chelev, Shagabea Keba, the fat that sits over the Abu Masim, Kohanim Nagu Bo Heter, Kerabi Ishmael. The Kohanim ate that fat, like Rabbi Ishmael's position, Shamar Mishum Abu Tab, who says over in the name of his forefathers, Besimanech. And the way to remember it is, Ishmael Kahana, Messiah Kahane. Rabbi Ishmael is a Kohen, and therefore he helps out the Kohanim. So if you want to remember who's the one who gave the heter to eat the fats on the kebab, it's Rabbi Ishmael the Kohen, because that's favorable towards the Kohanim. Why this is important to the Kohanim is because from any behemah chulin, the Kohanim are entitled to gifts. From any behemah that is shechted, they're entitled to the zroa lechaim and the kebab. They're entitled to those pieces of the animal that is chulin. So over here we're speaking about the kebab. So the keba was important to them, the fats on the keba, if they were able to eat those fats as well, that gave them an additional part of what was allowed to be eaten for them. The Kohanim were noeg heter al pi Rabbi Ishmael. They had a reason, they had a source for it, but they were inclined to follow it because it was helpful to them. It favored them by saying such a thing. And obviously there's no difference halachically between a Kohen and Israel, but because the Kohanim were receiving the keba, it was much more meaningful to them. And therefore, the Gemara associates the heter with the Kohanim, as Tosafot says, not because Israel felt differently, but because they were the main beneficiaries of it being mutar. Mahi, what exactly is this that Rabbi Ishmael said? The Tanya, ko tivarchu et b'nei Israel. Gemara here takes a diversion and starts to speak about Birkat Kohanim. The reason being, as Tosafot points out, is that they wouldn't have called him Rabbi Ishmael Messiah Kohane. Rabbi Ishmael, the one who helps out the Kohanim, if he gave one psak that was helpful to the Kohanim. So it must be that he has a trend of piskei halacha that are favorable towards the Kohanim. And that's what the Gemara is searching for. We know one of them, which is that the fats on the keba are allowed. What the Gemara wants to know is, what else did he say that was favorable towards the Kohanim that made them say or attribute to Rabbi Ishmael that he was the favorable posek towards the Kohanim? So it says, Kol Tivarchu et b'nei Yisrael, that's Birkat Kohanim. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Lamadnu Bracha L'Yisrael, Pi HaKohanim. The Kohanim give the Bracha, and the recipients and the beneficiaries are Yisrael. L'Kohanim Atzman Lo Lamadnu. We don't have anywhere it says that the Kohanim themselves get a Bracha. Kishu Omer, Bani Avarchem. When it says over there that I will bless them, Avi Omer, Kohanim Mivarchem L'Yisrael. The Kohanim give their Bracha to Yisrael. V'Kodesh Baruch Hu Mivarech L'Kohanim. And then Kodesh Baruch Hu blesses the Kohanim. The Ani Avarchem is really a dangling pronoun over there, because it says I, which obviously is a reference to Hashem, says I will bless them. Who is the them in the Pasuk? The Pasuk has two thems before that. One is the Kohanim who are giving the Bracha, and the other one is Israel, who are the beneficiaries or the recipients of the Bracha. So when it says Ani Avarchem, does that mean that Hashem will bless B'nai Israel? Does it mean he'll bless the Kohanim? So Yisrael interprets it to mean that he'll bless the Kohanim. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Lamanu Bracha Israel Mipia Kohanim. We know that B'nai Israel get a bracha from the Kohanim, because it says Kot Tivarchu et B'nai Israel. Mipi Gvura Lo Lamanu. But we don't have any evidence that Hashem gave them a bracha. Kshu Omer V'ani Avarchem Havi Omer. I interpret Ani Avarchem to say Kohanim B'varchem L'Israel V'Kodesh Baruch Hu Maskim Al Yadam. That the Kohanim give a bracha to Israel, and Hashem gives his stamp of approval, which is that the Kohanim are not the givers, the granters of bracha. Bracha comes from Hashem. So they are the emissaries of Hashem. They give a bracha, but the bracha is only valid if it's validated by the giver of brachot, which is Hashem. And that's what it means, V'ani Avarchem. I will bless them, them here being B'nai Yisrael. Hashem says, when the Kohanim bless B'nai Yisrael, I will validate that, and I will also bless B'nai Yisrael, using them as the conduit for that bracha. So now, Rabbi Ishmael says that the Kohanim get a bracha, whereas Rabbi Akiva says the Kohanim don't get a bracha, it's just a additional part of the bracha to B'nai Yisrael. Hello, Rabbi Akiva, bracha the Kohanim in Ale. It's not nice that the Kohanim don't get a bracha here. It must be that they get a bracha somehow. Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak, me avarecha mivarecheka. That from the statement by Abraham, those that bless you will be blessed. That's how the Kohanim get a bracha. Just like here, the Kohanim that are blessing B'nai Yisrael, Hashem promises those that bless B'nai Yisrael will be blessed. And so here, the Kohanim that bless B'nai Yisrael also will get a bracha from Hashem through that derivative method. Umay misayeh Kohanim, demuki la lebirkat Kohanim, bimbakum bracha di Yisrael. And that's what it means, that he was a Messiah of the Kohanim, because he puts the bracha to the Kohanim on par with the bracha that Yisrael receives. It's not just this derivative of, you gave a blessing, you get a blessing, but rather, while they're giving the blessing, Hashem blesses them. And so therefore, they're on par with Bnei Yisrael. And the Balei HaTosafot point out that that's what bothered the Kohanim. They want to get a direct bracha from Hashem, not this derivative bracha, because of Avarcham Evarchecha, Vafilo Ovdei Kochavim. Even non-Jews who give a bracha to Bnei Israel, they are the beneficiaries of this bracha of Abraham. Whoever blesses you will be blessed. That means anybody who gives a bracha to Bnei Israel. So it's not unique to the Kohanim. Even a Goy who does it will also get that benefit. So what they wanted was the direct bracha. They wanted to be that they get a direct bracha from Hashem, not just a derivative of the fact that they're giving a bracha, therefore they get a bracha. So Rabbi Shmuel is more favorably inclined towards the Kohanim over here, because he says they get a direct bracha from Hashem. It's even better. They're giving it to Bnei Yisrael, and they get a direct bracha from Hashem. On the other hand, the way Rabbi Kiva formulates it, is they get a bracha as a derivative of the fact that they're blessing Bnei Yisrael. They're entitled to a bracha from that. And so that's why Rabbi Shmuel was more favorable towards the Kohanim, or was more favorably viewed by the Kohanim. And obviously, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't need a pasuk that tells you that Hashem is maskim ayadam. Because Hashem told them to do the bracha. Of course he's maskim ayadam. He's the one who instructed them to give a bracha. So he doesn't need the ani avarchem to teach you that. Rabbi Shmuel, shamar mishum avutav, mahi. Now we go back to the origins and say, Rabbi Shmuel had a mesorah from his forefathers. What is that mesorah? Now, the Balei Tosafot over here point out, perish kabbalah haita b'yado sh'Rabbi Yoshaya. The Rabbi Shmuel mishum avutav, hitir. Rabbi Yoshaya had a mesorah. The Rabbi Shmuel, the name of his forefathers, was Matir. Avalo mitoch breita zo dictate. They were about to bring a breita that attributes this to Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yoshaya didn't learn that out of the breita, because the breita doesn't mention the forefathers of Rabbi Shmuel. He has a separate mesorah that Rabbi Shmuel, the name of his forefathers, said this. And now the Gemara is bringing a breita to try to figure out what exactly was this mesorah that Rabbi Shmuel had. Tanya, so the pasuk says that by the Shlamim, so it says by the pasuk in the Torah, certain fats that go on the Mizbeach. Fats that go on the Mizbeach are fats that are asur to eat in a behemat chulin. Obviously there are other fats that are included in those fats that are tamei, at shtei klayot, at chelev asher lehen, asher laksalim, et yoteret al hakaved klayot yisirenu. All those fats belong on the Mizbeach, and those fats, in a similar fashion, are going to be asur in a Beimat Chulin. Again, we're not going to spend so much time on this, because the Gemara is going to come back later on in the Masechta to discuss these issues of the Chelev and the Matnot Kuna from Chulin, and there we'll have more detailed discussion about exactly what's been spoken about over here. Lavi Chelev Shalgebe Adakim. It comes to include the fats that are on the intestines. And Rashi over here explains that we're going to say later on in the Gemara that Resh Ma'aya Ba'amta Boi Greira. Zeu Chelev Shal Adakim. Rashi over here says that the Chelev Shal Gabe Adakim is the fat that begins from the tail end of the Keba. The Keba, the Abu Masim, it narrows slowly towards its tail end and then becomes the intestines. So in that part where it starts to narrow and the first Amma of the intestines are still considered to be part of the chelev that is associated with the kerev, or the chelev that is associated with the keba. And that's the chelev shal adakim. That's the fat on the intestines that needs to be removed, because it's a sur, that is the fat that goes on the mizbeach. As Tosafot points out, the drosha derives from the fact that lo yatzirich lemichtav et hachelev amechaseh et hakerev. You don't need the pasuk of the chelev that covers over the innards. D'mi'et kol chelev asher lekerev. There's already a pasuk that says all chelev that's on the kerev is going on the mizbeach or is asur to eat. So now, once you have it kol chelev asher lekerev, why do you need et chelev hamechaseh et hakerev? That pasuk is extraneous. So what's clearly included in the chelev tamei or problematic chelev is chelev hamechaseh et hakerev, which are the innards or the digestive area. That fat that surrounds those organs in the digestive system, that's clearly asur. Question is, what in addition to that is added by the extraneous lashon in the pasuk that comes to include things beyond that chelev that sits around the kerev? clearly includes all the chelev that sits on the Beit HaKotzot, the Hem Seis. The question is, does that also include the Cheba, which is the tail end of the digestive system, which is somewhat outside of that chelev HaMechaseh HaKerev, but has its own fat on it, as well as the fats that continue along with the intestines? What's the story with that fat? So the question is, what is it mirabeh? And that's what Rabbi Shmuel says over here. It's mirabeh the chelev shel gebei adakim. It tells you not only the chelev hamechaseh hakerev that is problematic, but even the chelev that is mechaseh adakim, the intestines, but only that first amah, that it narrows after the keba, that fat as well is problematic. As Rashi points out, the chelev hamechaseh hakerev is attached to that fat that is running along the beginning of the intestines, and that's why it's negdar kamo the chelev mechaseh hakerev, because there's a close relationship or tie between them. That's divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva omer lavi chelev shel gabei hakeba, and he says it includes the chelev that's on the abumasim. So here is your machloket. Rabbi Akiva says the chelev on the keba is asur. It goes on the mizbeach, and it's also asur for you to eat. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel is matir. That's what we said before. Rabbi Shmuel is matir l'kohanim. He says that the chelev on the keba is okay. Very mini. Is that really true? Et chelev asher al hakerev. The pasuk that we just quoted before, or over here, they want to say et kol chelev asher al hakerev. Whichever one you think there's a base pasuk, and then there's a pasuk that adds on an additional riboy. So Rabbi Shimon omer, ma chelev amechaset hakerev, krum viniklaf. Just like the chelev that's on the innards, it is a film, and it peels away. Afkol krum viniklaf. So too, anything that is a film and peels away, that is considered to be chelev that is part of the kerev, and that's considered to be asur. So you have over here fat, which covers over the internal organs. That's the chelev amechaset the kerev, meaning that it has this sac that holds all of the digestive system and all the organs that are there. And that sac has a film on it that peels away from it. It is a thin film on it that can be peeled away from the fat. So that's the fat that is asur. And not only is that fat asur, any other fat that acts in a similar manner. That's what Rabbi Shimon tells us. On the other hand, Rabbi Kiva says, ma chelev mechaseh hakerev totav krum viniklaf. It sits. It has a thin film that can be peeled away. Avkol totav, that sits, and its film can be peeled away, that is considered to be asur. The difference between them, we're going to see in a second, the nafkamina, but what Rabbi Akiva is describing is not only a fat that where the film peels away, but it's a type of fat that is kind of riding over the organs and not intensely attached to them. Totav means it sits on the organ, but it's not integrally attached to the organ. That means when you peel it away, you take it away, it comes away easily. It peels away easily, it breaks away from the organ easily because it's sitting on top of it. If it was heavily attached to the organ, when you peeled it off, it would start to tear. It would leave pieces on the organ. So that's what he says. Totav is the extra word that he uses in his descriptor for the chelev. So Rabbi Shimon says it's anything that peels, comes off easily. Rabbi Kiva says it's anything that peels, but also it's only sitting on the organ. It's not directly attached to the organ. If you look in Rashi now, he gives you these descriptions in Rashi Totav, where Rabbi Kiva adds on, Totav is his simlato. It is like a piece of clothing, which is kisimlahu parus ala kerev. It is like a piece of clothing that is put around the inners. And as Rashi says, v'chein ala dakim biroshan. So too at the beginning of the intestines. Aval chelev hakeba enu totav. When it comes to the fat that sits on the abomasum, that is not the case. Ela chatichot chatichot hu aduk. It is piece that it's attached. Mishala dakim irosho v'hala. And beyond the beginning of the intestines that are close to the abomasum, hainu minakanta kishmafishim oto mehen nishar minachelev etzlam. Over there too, when you peel it away, it sticks to the intestines, whether that's referring to the small or large intestines, that area over there in the entrails, when you peel off the fat, it leaves pieces over there. Leaving pieces is an indication that it's not sitting on top of it. It's not like a simla. Velav totavu, ela adukbahem. It's not sitting or riding on top of it. It's not dressing it, but it's rather stuck to it. And therefore, when you peel it off, it leaves pieces along the way. You can only peel it off little piece at a time because it just doesn't peel away or come away from it. So Sikhat Cholin brings three different possibilities as to what it means to that Totav, Krum, Vinniklach, the one that we already said, that sounds like from Rashi, which is there's a thin film on top of the Chelev Mechaseh Tekerev that peels away from it, not attached tightly to the Chelev. So that in the fat itself, the outer part of the fat, there's a membrane or a thin film on it that peels away easily. That's the indicator of what is Chelev. There's another Perush that the underbelly of that fat has a thin film or membrane that peels away from it. Or the third possibility is that on the keres itself, here and there, there are pieces of fat that are attached to it that are in addition to the Chelev Mechaseh Tekerev that peel away from the keres. And that might be the reference as to what it means, Totav, Krum V'Niklaf over here. So now you have a little bit of a problem, which is that Rabbi Kiva over here is suggesting that the Chelev on the Keba is not going to be a sur, because the Chelev on the Keba is, as Rashi says, Eino Totav. Doesn't sit on there, it's really attached tightly to the keba. Rabbi Kiva in the previous Braita said that Chelev Shal Gabei HaKeba is Asura. Now we have a Braita indicating, based on Rabbi Kiva's description, that the Chelev on the keba is fine. How do you reconcile this Stira in Rabbi Kiva? So Shalach Rabin Mishmei Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabin, who's one of those that travels back and forth between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, bringing memro from Rabbi Yochanan, he sends, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Kachi Atzah Shal Mishnah. This is the way you should read this Mishnah. The one that we just quoted is correct. Ipuch kamaita. But you need to flip the Braita that we saw before. So now that means that we're flipping Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva's positions. And the Gemara asks, Mai chazi da'afach kamaita. Why are you flipping the first Braita? Ipuch batraita. Why don't you flip the positions in the latter Braita? How do you know that the first one is incorrect, and then we have to flip Rabbi Kiva's position there? Maybe the first one is correct, and you need to flip his position in the second one. Shiny Hocha, over here in the second one, came to Tani Ma Dafka. Over there in the Braita, it asks specifically, Ma Chelev HaMachaseh Tekerev. So there, people are going to be more meduyak about what they're quoting and whose name they're quoting it, because it's a very particular statement defining what is considered to be the Chelev that Mechaseh Tekerev. So now, based on that, you want to flip the first Braita to match the second Braita. Rabbi Kiva in the second Braita says, Chelev HaKeba is mutar. And therefore, now we're going to flip Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva in the first Braita to say that Rabbi Kiva thinks that the Chelev HaKeba is mutar. But now you have a problem. Yochik or Rabbi Shmuel. We said before the Kohanim, Paskin like Rabbi Shmuel, who's the Kohen, and he's the one who's matir for them, the Chelev HaKeba, to Rabbi Akiva he. It's not like Rabbi Shmuel, it's like Rabbi Akiva. So why are they saying it's in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, based on the way that you're giving the attribution here? So Avraham Nachman Yitzchok Shamar Mishum Avotav Belei Lo Svirlei. That's exactly what the Mesorah of Rabbi Chaya was. He had a Mesorah that Rabbi Shmuel, in the name of his forefathers, said that Chelev Asher Gabei HaKeva is okay. But he himself doesn't say that. And that's Rabbi Chaya specifically said that Rabbi Shmuel B'Shem Avotav was said that it was Mutar. Because he had a Mesorah about that. But that wasn't Rabbi Shmuel's view, and that's why Tosafot said before, Rabbi Hoshaya doesn't get that from the Braita, because the Braita doesn't say that. The way that we've now amended the Braita doesn't say that that's the view of Rabbi Shmuel. He had a separate Mesorah that was the case, and that's what we're saying now, that that's what he had from his forefathers, but he himself did not agree with that Mesorah. Amarav, Chelev Tahor Sutem, Tamei Enu Sutem. So that this kind of rides on top of what we just said before by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, describing the Chelev Tamei, the stuff that is Asur, says it has three features to it. It has a thin film that peels away, which Rabbi Shmuel said as well. But in addition, he says it's Totav. It sits or rides on top of the organ that it is covering. So now, what Rav is saying is, that type of fat is not going to be successful at plugging a hole. If there's a hole in whatever organ it is there, when you have a fat that rides on top of it, it's not going to seal the hole because it's not firmly attached to the organ. And that means that Chelev Tamei is not Sotein. That which is Tamei, which rides on top, that's the description of it, is something that is not Sotein. On the other hand, Chelev Tahor, which is Chelev, when you peel it away, it sticks to the organ, that's Chelev that's really integrated with the organ itself. And that is able to then, if you have a hole in the organ and the fat is sitting right on top of it, that's going to seal the hole. That's not going to allow it to come out or whatever's inside to come out because of the fact that it's so tightly attached to the organ. So it's actually a derivative of the difference between chelip tahor and chelip tameh. The chelip tameh, which rides on top, won't seal. Chelip tahor, which is firmly attached to the organ, that will seal it. Rav Sheshet Omer, echad zeh ve'echad zeh sotem. Rav Sheshet says they both have the capacity to seal. By Rabbi Zeira, chelip chaya mai. When you're dealing with chelip of a quote-unquote wild animal, what's the din? Chelip of a chaya is mutar, because the chelip of a chaya doesn't go on the mizbeach. So therefore, in Chulin, it's not asur. Chelip beima that would have gone on the mizbeach in a korban is asur in Chulin. What's the din? Because you have something here which is a nuance. The chelip of the chaya is mutar. You're allowed to eat it. On the other hand, it's exactly the same locations in the chaya as it is in the beima. There's no distinction between tahor and tameh in the chaya. But if you look at the chelip inside of the chaya, it's no different than the beima. There's certain pieces of fat that sit directly attached to the organs, and others that ride on top of it. And it'll be similar to the behema. The chelib of the kerev in the behema is separate, and that's why it's tameh. So too in the chaya, it's going to be that way, even though you can't eat it. So what's the din? Basically, their question is it the physical properties that determine, or is it the halachic properties that determine? The physical properties of the chelib of the chaya are no different than the physical properties of the chelib of the behema. On the other hand, there's a halachic difference. So when Rav says, tahor sotem, tameh enu sotem, does the halachic classification determine its efficacy in covering it up? Or is it a practical question? Davka amar chilev tohor sotem? Did he say specifically chilev tohor? V'hai nami tohoru. That's also tohor because it's the halachic definition. Odilmi mishum de mahadek. V'hai lo mahadek. Or is the answer that he's giving you a siman? He's giving you a symptom, but that's not the reason. The symptom is that tohor covers, tameh doesn't cover. But that's not because it's tohor or tameh. That's because tahor fat is tightly attached, tameh fat is not attached. So he's just giving you a siman in the behema, but that's not the real reason. The reason has to do with the fats and the way they are practically or realistically attached to the organs. Sam Rabaye, mighty bayile. What's the question? He the shari v'achila, huduke lo ma'adek. Rabaye dismisses it offhand. He says, there's nothing to discuss over here. The chelev here is clearly not attached, even though it's tahor. So it's tahor, but it's not attached. If it's not attached, it's not going to seal anything up. So there's no question here. And he says it's clearly a practical definition, and he's just giving you a siman. That chelip tahor, chelip tameh, and the behema is delineated by this distinction, and therefore you can use that as a guide to know which fats cover and which fats don't cover. But it's not because it's tahor and tameh. Tahor and tameh are just symptomatic of that type of chelip that's either riding on top or is tightly attached to the organ. Now, the Balei Tosafot over here say, chelip tahor sutein. Chelip tahor is able to seal up. Lo mari hacha bereya. This is not speaking about the lungs. Vishuman sotmata. That you have fat by the lungs that seals it up. O nisracha bishuman. Or it has some sort of fibrous growth between the lungs and the fat that's there. The pshita the trefa. He says for sure that's a trefa. The stima zo enoklum. That type of sealing is nothing. The ain shuman bereya. Says the lungs have no fat around them. Now that's not true. If you open up the animal, you'll see there is fat around the lungs. The answer to that is it's not fat that belongs to the lungs. It is fat that belongs to other organs that run by the lungs. And therefore it doesn't belong to them. The heart sits embedded in the base of the lungs. So the heart actually has fat around it. And that fat around the heart actually is adjacent to the lungs. But that fat does not belong to the lungs. It belongs to the heart. Similarly, the aorta, when it runs between the lobes of the lungs, over there also there's a very fatty cover around the aorta. But the fat belongs to the artery, not to the lungs themselves. And that's what Tosafot points out over here, that none of the seals that are done by fat up against the lungs are efficacious, because the lungs don't have any natural fat that is attached to them or associated with them, and therefore you can't have fat that provides cover for whatever trefa there is in the lungs. Number two is chelip chayamai. The Gemara over here only asks about a chaya. There's another animal, an oaf. The bird also has the same thing as a chaya, that all the fats are mutarim. What's the din with regards to the fats of the birds? Are they so tame or are they not so tame? So he says, Nishal Rabbeinu Yitzchak. That question came up. A machat shenimtza bekurkuban. They found a needle inside the gizzard of the oaf. V'nikva kishilo. And it penetrated through the membrane of the gizzard. V'gam b'saro. And also through the flesh, meaning that the two membranes around. Rak sheyashuman sotem lamala. But there was fat sitting on the gizzard, that provided a seal over the hole. Vehitir. And he says it was mutar. Because he says the Gemara here only asks about a chelev of a chaya. Because the chaya and a beima are similar in their design. It's just one's a chaya, one's a beima. And that creates the distinction in the fats being mutar and not being mutar. Of a chelev tahor the oaf, lo matzinu k'nek go tamei. The chelev tahor in the bird, we don't find a parallel fat that is tamei in the animal. Meaning that by the beima, we have tamei and tahor. But chaya, everything's tahor. But if you take those things that are parallel to the beima, which are tamei and the beima, for the chaya, they're going to be problematic. But a bird is a totally different entity. And therefore, the fats that are there that are torim, all of those fats are going to be fine, and they will be efficacious in sealing up whatever hole is there. And he says, chita de sodeim de mahadek shapir. You look at the fat that's on the gizzard of the bird, it's very tightly attached to it. It doesn't peel off easily. It doesn't just wrap around it. And he says it has the features that would indicate that that fat is good fat, even though that type of fat in the animal in that location is not, but for the bird it is, because the bird is not similar to the animal. And for that reason, he was matir, the fats that sealed up something in a bird. Right? How nekev, the satma chelev tameh, the ata lekameh derovot. So there was a hole in one of the organs of the animal that would have made it into a treifa that was sealed up by non-kosher fats. Tim for rova. Amar rova, lemay nichushla. What are we worried about? Rav Sheshet is of the opinion that Chelev Tahor and Chelev Tamei are successful at sealing up a hole. Vod, HaTorah Chasal Memonam Shel Yisrael. We know that the Torah worries about causing losses to Bnei Yisrael. The source for that is based on the Torah Kohanim by the case of Tzarat HaBayit, where it says over there that the Kohen is instructed to go to the Bayit and have all the utensils taken out before he paskins on the house. So the Torah Kohanim says, what are we worried about? All the things that are inside the bayit become tahor afterwards. You take them to the mikveh, you sprinkle them with the paraduma. So in the end, it turns out the only thing that you can't be mitaher is kli cheres, or earthenware utensils. Those are cheap little items in the house. Nevertheless, the Torah was chasa, alma monam sheiso, worried about their property. And even though it was a small item, they had to be evacuated from the house before they made the house tameh. So you see from that, a Torah chasa, alma monam sheiso. So Rav is invoking that and saying, we don't want to make it into a treifa because of this. So we're going to follow Rav Sheshet, who says that it is good enough to seal it up. And the Torah's Chasam Amrach, so it should be mutar. Amalei Rav Papa. Rav Papa is Talmud, says to the Rava, Rav. First of all, you have Rav, who paskins against Rav Sheshet and says Chelet Tamei is not successful. V'isura d'oraita. We're not just dealing with some little din d'rabbanan. For monetary reasons, we're going to waive it. This is a din d'oraita. V'ata marta Torah Chasam Amrach Yisrael. And you're trying to invoke a principle about monetary losses? That doesn't seem to make any sense here. First of all, Rav is of a dissenting opinion, and we're generally going to pass him like Rav in this situation. So first of all, he says Chelev Tamei is not so tame. In addition to that, you're dealing with the Din Doraita. Safek Doraita is the Chumra, and you want to speak about Torah Chasam and Manam Shisrael. It's not the right place to invoke that principle. Minyume Kanduka Iglele Besitka Dedubsha. Minyume Kanduka, Rashi says that he heard that it means he was a potter. He sold pitchers, pottery, and barrels. Iglele Bistika Dedubsha. He had some sort of storage utensil full of honey that was left open. This is what we call galoy, or we have this Mayim Migulim, water that was left open overnight, and we're afraid that a snake came, deposited its venom in it, and then it's going to be problematic to drink, dangerous to drink. So now he has this with a whole barrel of honey, which is a lot of money. Ata lekamei derova. So he brought the question for Rova, what's the din of this devash, of this honey? So I'm a Rova, lemay nichushla. Why should we worry about it? Chado detznan. We have a Mishnah. Shlosha mashkim asurim mishum giloy. There are three types of liquids or drinks that we worry about being left open overnight. That is yain, wine, mayim, water, ve'achalav, and milk. Other liquids or drinks don't appeal to the snakes, and therefore they do not deposit their venom in them. Vod, a Torah chasam, amnam shi Yisrael. Again, that principle that, oh, the Torah worries about Bnei Yisrael, so we're going to be mekil over here, because we don't want to lose all of the honey here. Amalei Rav Nachma Yitzhak Derova. First of all, Rabbi Shimon, who dissents in that Mishnah and says that the snakes do drink devash. And number two, sakanat nefashot. You're dealing with a life and death issue. V'atamar Torah chasam amnam shi Yisrael. You're trying to save a guy some money. Meantime, it's a life or death situation. If there is venom in here, he's going to die from it. and you're telling him, oh, you know what, save some money, you can use this honey. That's a dangerous way to go. And Gemara says that sakanta chamirta misura. Danger is more problematic than even isur. We're going to be more chamor by danger because that's a life and death situation. So Rabbi Shimon Mahi, what is Rabbi Shimon's dissenting opinion? Titania, we have a brayta. Chamisha imbeh mishum gilui. There are five items that don't have an issue of gilui because the snakes don't drink from them. Tzir, brine, chometz, vinegar, shemen, oil, dvash, honey, which is what we're discussing over here, umorios, which is like pickled fish hash that's in wine or in brine. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af pein yesh ben mishum giloi. Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says that those do have a problem of giloi. V'amar Rabbi Shimon, ani reiti nachash, shishatat sir bit saidan. I saw in the place saidan that I saw a snake go and drink from the brine. So I have firsthand evidence of the fact that they do drink from these things. Amrlo shatya haba. That was a foolish snake. We're not going to make evidence from a crazy snake. That was a one-off crazy snake. In general, snakes don't do it. You have one snake that's off his rocker, that's not going to determine over here. So Amrle. So Rava says to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Oderli mihat bitzir. At least agree with me with regards to tzir. Dabra popo, Rabuna brede Yeshua, Rabbanon, Gihavale gluya. When they had a problem of giloy, in that water or something was left overnight, shadule bitzir. They used to throw in the brine into it because the brine, as Rashi knows over here, used to weaken the venom inside. It used to be almost like an antidote. It would, the enzymes would break it apart and the venom wouldn't stay. So Rava says to Rav Nachman by Yitzchak that at least by tzir, you don't have to worry about it. So Amarlei, Odolei, Mebe, Devash. So Rav Nachman sends it back to him. You should at least agree with me with regards to honey, the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Kai Kavate. Because we have Rabbi Shimon Elazar who backs up this view of Rabbi Shimon and also says that honey is problematic. Titania, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Oser B'Dvash. He used to say that honey was problematic in terms of giloy. And again, that then pushes against this psak of Rava. And the Bali Tosafot note over here that Rapapa, who dissented against Rava's psak before, and now Rav Nachman Yitzchak was also pushing against him, that the Bali Tosafot would say, Kidda Rapapa Halacha. The Halacha is like Rapapa, even though he's the Talmud of Rava. Because of Mistaver, the Rava Nami Chazarba. Rav Papa has a good claim here, and he thinks that Rava must have backed away from his position over here, and because we're going to see further on that there's a statement here in the Gemara that seems to corroborate that we believe what Rava said was reversed. So he says that the law is like Rav Papa, and he would then assume here as well that Rav Nachman by Yitzchak's critique of Rava was also then upheld the halacha, and at least by Dvash, we would worry about Giloy. So Amar Rav Nachman, chelev asui ki kova eino sutein. Fat that is like a hat does not sutein. Pecha, where do we find such a thing? What does that mean? What is, he says, Amrila, chite de karkasha. It is the kernels that are on the rectum. Vamrila, tarpashta de liba. And others suggest that it's the pericardium, which is the fat that sits around the heart. So that if you have a hole in the heart and the fats around it, that chelev is not sotein because it's like a chelev like a kova. So Rashi over here describes why it's called a kova. Chite de karkashto. Chelev shalachal cholet. The fats that are on the rectum, homotzia rei, which the excrement comes out of, asui kratin kratin. They are like little pieces of fat, ke'in chitim, similar to kernels of wheat. Vimnikva. If it has a hole in the rectum, oto chelev sotma lo mahani, it doesn't help over there. Vitrefa, vikratin agulin hein kemol kova, and they are circular in nature, like a hat. So along the rectum, you have these spotted types of pieces of fat that you can see here in Sichat Chulin. You can see a picture of it. So they look like hats because they're circular in nature, and they are small, like kernels of wheat. It's not like a total cover of fat. There's small pieces of fat that sit on it, not this total encompassing fat. The other possibility is it that's on tarpasha de liba. It is in the pericardium on the fat that surrounds the heart. And again, he says, shumana leiva sui kakova. That fat is like a hat. Balev nechbabo. So this is a different description of hat over here. It's like a hat because of the shape of the heart. The heart is like almost triangular in nature, and the fat that surrounds it creates this kind of cover that if you pull the heart out of the fat, it would look like an upside down hat when you pull it out. And that's why it's called a kov over there. And therefore, if there's some breakdown in the heart and it's plugged by that fat, it's not helpful for the heart. And Rashi notes over here, similar to what we saw in the Bayit Tosfot before, it's certainly not helpful for the rea, for the lungs as well. And that's what Rashi adds over here. V'hainu taima, the rea, smucha b'shuman aleif. If you have lungs that are attached by fibrous material to the fat around the heart, da'afagav da'ainu revita, even though that's its natural growth, and it grows tightly together with the heart, because the heart sits right in the bottom of the lobes of the lungs, v'etzlohu gadel, it grows there, v'lamata mechitu choda onihu, and it's right below the break in the lobes. Trefa, it's still a trefa. Darkocha chareya nikva chen sircha below nekev v'stima zu en okrom. It's clear that if the fibrous material is growing there, or there's something growing there, it's because of a hole in the lungs, and the fat of the heart is not efficacious in covering it up, and therefore it's going to be a trefa. So those are the two possibilities as to what Rav Nachman was addressing over here. Now Amar Rava Shma Mitnei the Rav Nachman Tarte. I heard over from Rav Nachman, Rava is the Talmud of Rav Nachman, he's saying, I heard from my Rebbe two things. Chimsa, ubar chimsa. One of them was called chimsa, one of them was called bar chimsa. Chad satim, v'chad lo satim. One of them is successful at sealing up holes, one of them is not successful at sealing up holes. V'lo yadana, hey minayu. I don't know which one is which. I mean, I have them sora, I know one of them works, one of them doesn't. I just don't remember which one is connected to which. So this is what the Bali Tosfa quote to show that Rava clearly changed his mind later on based on Rav Papa. Funa bar chinina, Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Nachman, Amar. So now we have a Masora from other individuals who now tell us over what Rav Nachman said, including Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Nachman. So they say, bar chimsa satim. The bar chimsa is successful at sealing it up. Chimsa lo satim. But the chimsa is unsuccessful at sealing it up. Amarab to vote, v'simaneich. The way to remember that is, the power of the son is more powerful than the father. They're quoting from a Mishnah in Shavuot, whereby the son has the capacity to collect with a Shavuot, without a Shavuot, whereas the father only has the capacity to collect with a Shavuot. And there the Mishnah says that the son is more powerful than the father in his ability to collect. So they're using that expression, borrowing that term and bringing it over here and saying that the son is more powerful than the father. Is that the Ben Chimsa is successful at sealing things up, as opposed to the Chimsa, which is the father, that is not as successful at sealing things up. So now the Gemara asks, hey Chimsa, hey Bar Chimsa. Okay, now we know what the din is. What exactly is the Chimsa, and what is the Bar Chimsa? And the Gemara now is going to say that it's the Chelev that is on the Keba. Keba is actually shaped like a crescent, and that the crescent has fat on the inside of the Keba, inside of the crescent, and on the outer side of the crescent, and then the Gemara is going to then describe based on that what they think is mutar, what they think is asur, and its relationship to chimsa bar chimsa. We're going to leave that for tomorrow because there's a large discussion about that fat that is on the keba that takes us in deeper into tomorrow's Gemara. So we're going to stop here on the last line of Memtet Amud Bet.